A real pleasure to welcome back Brian Fitzherbert, in studio chairman of the Atlantic County Young Republicans. How are things going, Brian?
Yes, sir. So the first meeting for Atlantic County Young Republicans is going to be July 26th at McCullough's over in EHT at 5:30. We're targeting ages 14 to 40. So Keith Davis, after the election, after the primary, we had a nice sit down, and he wanted to make sure I was kept involved. And he suggested, why don't we put together an Atlantic County Young Republicans organization? And I jumped at that opportunity because we need more young people, in particular, supporting the Republican Party. You know, the Democrats, they've said for years and years, ever since Obama got elected, that, oh, you know, the millennial voters, the youth vote, everyone within that age group, oh, those are ours. Not true. And what President Trump has done in the last 18 months, almost 2 years now, is proven that a lot of young people, millennials in particular, are getting a fair shake, and they're seeing what Republicans in power are able to do. And we need to coalesce that, and we need to bring that into numbers so that we can support the other candidates in the county come November.
Brian, if someone isn't in a position that maybe they're working or they just could be away, they just can't make it on Thursday the 26th, how can you join the Atlantic County Young Republicans?
So we have a Facebook page at Atlantic County Young Republicans, as well as an Instagram page. And I encourage all your listeners to reach out to any young people that they know, whether they're kids, nephews, nieces, grandchildren, etc. Tell them about Atlantic County Young Republicans. Tell them to check out the Facebook page. Tell them to check out the Instagram page. Reach out. Get involved. It's going to be monthly meetings, and we're going to do a lot of things where we're going to have guest speakers, past and current elected officials that can give us some kind of exposure and experience, okay, as well as talk about the current events that are going on, not just in the county, but the state, as well as the nation.
I from the moment I heard about it, I thought it was a great idea. From the moment I heard about it and I heard that you would be the first chairman of the organization, I thought perfect fit, and I know you'll do very well with it. And I really think it is important, because to just seed the ground that, because indoctrination is happening in our colleges, that all young adults are automatically Democrats, that's not true. And we have to make sure that even the perception of that is not true.
Exactly. And you need a forum or some opportunity for people to coalesce and organize with. You know, I reached out to the Stockton Republican Club as well. They're going to work with us. There's a lot of other individuals that...
All three of them? I'm just teasing.
Yeah, well, we'll grow on that.
Just teasing.
We'll grow on that. And that's the point. We need to build up an arm. We need to build up supporters and coalesce. And, you know, it could start with as many as one person, and then there's two, then there's three. And you continue to build on that and get people involved, because not everyone necessarily wants to be involved or be in the limelight. But if they know that something's out there that's being organized, that's the point. And we need to be able to combat basically the Democrats and those opportunities, because you know as well as I do, kids that grow up in high school, that grow up in the colleges, they get told one thing and they have to either abide by quote unquote the party line, or their grades suffer, which is ridiculous. And even if you defend Trump or defend what the Republicans are doing, which is pretty good 18 months when you think about it, everything that's been happening with the economy, everything else, what exactly is the Democrats and the left in particular resisting? They're resisting low unemployment. They're resisting a good economy. They're resisting a guy who's finally taking control with regards to NATO overseas and everything else that he's added to the equation. You know, college and high school in particular, you know, that's 4 years of life. Life begins after high school. Life begins after college. You know, the left has, in the last 50 years, has making a strong effort to control a lot of pillars of the United States, right? They're in Hollywood, right? So they're controlling TV and movies and all that kind of stuff. So the younger kids that see stuff, they see things and they think that it's normal because they don't have the critical thinking ability to actually identify that or parallel that something else, because they're younger. They're 10, 11, 12 years old.
Or if you only see one thing, for example, 90% negative Trump coverage.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a really good chance that in 1.5 years, and even during the campaign itself, but the last 1.5 years as president, 9 out of every 10 times you're going to hear or see something very hyper negative.
Exactly. And if you shout the loudest, or if you have the biggest microphone, it makes it sound like the entire country's that way. And most of the time, that's not the case, as has been proven by previous elections, etc. And what President Trump has been able to do, think about all these college graduates that are coming out this year and last year. And
now they have choices.
Now they have choices. They have opportunities to get jobs.
When Obama was in, there were no jobs.
There were no jobs. And what happened? These individuals, either they took jobs elsewhere across the country, or they stayed at home because they couldn't afford to live on their own, pushing off getting married, pushing off being on their own. And now we have the opportunity, because the economy is roaring, that all these individuals that are graduating, they have opportunities for jobs. Maybe they even have more than one job offer, and they're not being forced to live at home with their parents.
Here's something that I celebrate, and I don't say this as a smart aleck. we're entering a period where employers are having difficulty finding people again.
Exactly.
The whole paradigm has shifted. What this means, any bad employers that have been mistreating employees and almost telling them, you get no raise, you get no respect, you get no nothing, and you better like it because you have nowhere else you can go. And people would take it. They'd hate their job, but they would take it. Now, and I'm not saying this is necessarily the right attitude, but now people are quitting the job they have because they have other opportunities. This means now employers are going to have to change their game again.
Yeah, and they're going to have to.
That's a good thing.
It's a good thing because they have to remain competitive. You always like competition, right? And when you have an opportunity that you've been sitting tight for 4, 6, 8 years in a job that you may not necessarily like, and all of a sudden you've got options, it's going to be a mass exodus from that particular company. And they have to find a way to adjust to be able to compete to bring more opportunity and more reason to come work for them. And, you know, that's a good thing because, you know, when things would get built up and they kind of stay stagnant and then all of a sudden the economy roars and then it breaks down, then you build up again. President Trump ran on this. The Republicans ran on a better economy.
Remember, to protect Obama, they said we could never grow a 3.3% GDP ever again. They said, please don't blame him. It's all different now. They called it the new norm.
The new norm.
The new norm. There's never, until Barack Obama, there was never a deep downturn that was not immediately followed by a robust recovery until Obama.
And that's because they tried, government got involved in the
like
market.
Like FDR.
And
kept us in the depression.
Kept us in the depression, just like it kept us in the Great Recession.
Right, but schools won't teach that.
No, they won't, because
they make
Obama's
that look
the greatest.
Good.
Yeah, Obama's the greatest thing ever.
If you believe the recent Pew poll, he's the greatest president
of our lifetimes
of everybody alive today of our lifetime. Really?
Yeah, I mean, it's just to the point either people aren't informed or they're only getting one source of information. And you know, I would love to see what that looks like in 4 years. After Trump has had a term or two, showing what he's been able to do, because in essence, Obama has created potentially an entire generation of Republicans because they thought the new normal was what they were growing up with and graduating with. Now they're seeing President Trump and all these new individuals, new millennials graduating college, high school, and seeing opportunity. President Obama might have created an entire generation of Republicans that support not only the Republican Party, but President Trump come 2020.
The law of unintended consequences.
Yes.
We'll be right back. Brian Fitzherbert, he is the chairman of the brand new Atlanta County Young Republicans.
14 to 40 is the age group that we're targeting. Anyone that you think might want to be involved in the Republican Party, have them reach out on Facebook, Atlanta County Young Republicans, Atlanta County Young Republicans, and Instagram, Atlanta County Young Republicans. And we want to be able to build up an organization and coalition to support all the Republican tickets come November.
Excellent. Brian Fitzherbert is our guest, former candidate for the House of Representatives in District 2, and currently the chairman of the Atlanta County Young Republicans. And I really hold a lot of faith and hope that this is going to be a very vibrant, a very important organization. And then people, like-minded people, will be getting together and having business mixers and socials and having meetings and actually enjoying the fact that like-minded people have a format, a forum, and an organization. And I believe you can have a high impact, Brian.
And that's the goal. We need to bring as many young people into the Republican Party as possible and get them prepped for potential things down the road, whether it's getting involved at an election level or supporting and volunteering those that come that are running in November.
Hey, good morning, Brian.
Good morning.
You really impressed me, Brian. What a Democratic Party. They boo God and applaud Struck.
They also vote
That's
against God three
picture.
Times. We have an ongoing thing, Linda and I. She's more impressed that they booed God. I'm more impressed they voted against God three times. Go ahead.
Brian, I saw an article. I couldn't believe my ears, and then I was listening to you this morning, and it sort of confirmed it for me. White millennials are leaving the Democratic Party. I thought, what? And this is real clear politics, but it looks like clearly there's a shift.
I think when you have an impact to your life, to your career, to the potential of your future. If you graduate during the Obama administration and you know how tough it is to get a job, you're stuck living at home with your parents because you can't afford to be on your own. You've got student loan debt that's towering over you, and you don't have a way to dig yourself out. And you may have a girlfriend or whatever, whoever you're dating, and you can't propose to them because you can't save up the money. You can't save up the money for a ring. Can't save up the money for a down payment for a house. You're stalled. And then
you can't even qualify for a house because the school debt takes your debt to equity ratio where you can't even buy a house.
Exactly.
Even if you have good credit.
Even if you have good credit, then all of a sudden you start to see all these individuals that maybe 6-8 years later that were your age, and they're able to have the opportunity that you didn't. And it was because of who was in political power at the time, because the Republicans have shown time and time again that those free market principles, that the push that President Trump has done with taxes, with the economy, with jobs, everything to make it more achievable for companies to produce jobs, create in a larger economy, is happening. So what's going to happen to that? You're going to have that impact, and you're going to look at what your situation is. You're going to look at what's happening now, and you're like, why is this? And you're going to look into it. And then all of a sudden, what we talked about in the last segment, unintended consequences of all these individuals that were gung-ho about Obama. What did he actually do for you? And compare that to what President Trump is able to do by allowing free market to do its thing, cut taxes, allow the regulations to be cut, and unleash like rocket fuel the economy, the stock market, all this kind of stuff. And all of a sudden you're going to start to think, oh, well, maybe I should reconsider, because now you're getting married, now you're having kids. I don't want my kids to be in that kind of situation. I want them to have the best thing for me, because it's not just you anymore. It's you, your wife, your spouse, your family, your children that you're thinking about, and you want them to have a better life than what you did. And that is the biggest push. And I think a lot of millennials are getting that exposure because they're able to finally compare, because they may not have been old enough to see George W. Bush and the Republicans of the early 2000s and what they were able to do. All they remember is the crash. They remember what their parents went through, if it was negative, if it was tough, or friends or mentors or teachers, people that lost their jobs. That sticks to you. And when you see something and you associate it with who is in power, potentially the Democrats and President Obama, and you shift and you look at the Republicans and President Trump today, you make that comparison. You make a decision.
It's a very good point, Brian.
Yeah, exactly. And remember, when I graduated, I wanted to get a job here in South Jersey. I couldn't get a job. I went all the way to Texas to get a job because I needed to sustain and I needed to be able to pay off some student loan debt. And that's the other thing. The student debt debacle has gotten to a point where there's no return. Remember, the Obama administration nationalized or basically took control of the federal loan program, and there's an easy supply of money. So what happens? Anyone at any major, at any interest rate that's basically that they're pegging it to, can study anything because there's that easy supply of money. Why are college and universities going to lower their price if they can just say, oh, you can go get a loan? Doesn't matter what you study, doesn't matter how long it's going to take you, because remember, it used to be that you graduate in 4 years, and when the Obama administration came out with their grade on how good a school is or whatnot, they did it based on graduating in 6 years, not 4 years, which is the typical 4-year degree. Now, I know there are other situations that, you know, some people go back to school, some people save up money, all different things happen. I understand that. But in the grand scheme of things, when you have an easy supply of money that's driving up the cost of tuition, there's no reason for colleges and universities to bring down the price. So then you see this.
There's an incentive for the opposite.
It's the incentive for the opposite. And businesses operate like businesses, right? They have taxes, they have things that they have to follow. Colleges and universities do not. And they keep arguing that if you treat them like a business, because they act and operate like a business, that they're going to pass that on the consumer and higher tuition rates.
Then you come out with your degree that took you 5 or more years to get, and you have 1 year basically to get a job. And then your only opportunity at that point, if you don't have a job yet and you can't afford to pay these loans, is to do forbearance or deferrals. But of course, the interest is crushing
it's
you.
It's crushing you.
On top of it, and you get 3 years of the forbearance. And it's so cruel what they did.
It is. And this will probably be the biggest driver for millennials to abandon, to walk away from the Democrat Party.
I hope.
Because why are they understand that they're taking out a massive amount, dozens, thousands of dollars worth of debt, because they want to get a better life for themselves. They want to get a college degree. But at the same time, we've been in a society where, oh, quote unquote, you can't do anything unless you have a college degree. That's BS in my opinion. You can go to tech schools. You can go to vocational schools. You can be very successful being a plumber, being an electrician, all these things that you don't need a college degree for. And there needs to be, not everyone's for college, not everyone's for technical school. You have to do what's best for you as an individual, and that's what the Democrats don't understand. They're collective by nature. Republicans by nature are individuals, and you need to take those different circumstances. And I think this is what's affecting the millennials in particular, because all of a sudden they're making that comparison. And if they've got crushing student student loan debt that they no longer have to deal with at the astronomical levels of the mid-2000s, basically the Obama administration, because they're making better decisions. Maybe they apply to a school they want, they defer for 2 years, they go to the community college nearby, they save some money, and they're able to graduate in 4 years because they're able to do that.
And Brian, as you say all this, and I'm buying all of it, as you say all this, the other side is becoming more and more socialist radical. So it's really, I don't want them to change. I love what's happening. You have Pelosi basically criticizing this Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. She's criticizing. Now, think about this. It's pretty wild when somebody who right now is, quote unquote, the face of the Democratic Party is so dramatically even more socialist, hard left leaning than a Pelosi type. But this is what's happening right now.
It is. And, you know, to Linda's point earlier, with millennials are going to see this. Millennials are going to make comparisons. You know, we all have eyes. We can see things. We can hear things about what happens. So you've got a point. You've got to press that the fact that this woman up in New York that is the nominee that took out a 10-year incumbent who's arguably the person that was going to take over as Speaker of the House.
10-term incumbent. 20 years.
My apologies.
Yeah. Number four. In the ranking of the Democrat House
hierarchy, and was a potential replacement for Speaker of the House if they got control of the House of Representatives come 2018. So you see this, and now you're going farther to the left. And what draws on a comparison is there was a lot of the situation that happened in 2010, right? There's a lot of seats that the Republicans could have won, not just in the Senate, but in the House, because to an extent, a perfect example is Christine O'Donnell in Delaware, right? You went too far, and you didn't understand the local issues of the state, right? You were trying to have national issues drive that conversation.
So they nominated a witch.
So they nominated someone that couldn't win in the general election, and that's very important. And what could possibly be
and
is...
And it happened. Think about it. We wouldn't even be worried right now. Oh, my God. What's Lisa Murkowski going to do? What's Susan Collins going to do? Think about Claire McCaskill, totally beatable. Anybody, I'm telling you, Donald, Daisy, Duck, Mickey Mouse, anybody would have won that. You have in Nevada, anybody would have beat Harry Reid except Sharron Engel. In Delaware, any Republican was going to win other than Christine O'Donnell, who, by the way, just somebody says, oh, my God, he called her a witch. She called herself a witch.
Yeah, and
I'm not calling her a witch.
Yeah, she had a commercial saying that, you know, she wasn't a witch later.
Yeah, later, but she you know,
but this,
she was.
But this is unforced errors, and the comparison I'm
That's
making...
That's three seats is what I'm trying to say.
And you throw in Donnelly over in Indiana.
Right, there's four.
Because of Murdoch.
So, then you also throw in, let's be honest, the South Carolina thing right now is horrible.
It is.
And I love Roy Moore, but...
Alabama.
Alabama is what I meant, right. I love Roy Moore, but look at this stuff that came out that we didn't know about. And there wasn't time to explain it, and he didn't do a good job explaining it. He actually said he did it. He didn't say anything wrong with it, basically. He said, well, I had their father's permission.
Yeah, and
holy smokes.
This is the kind of stuff you need to be fully vetted for when running for public office, because things come out. There are surprises.
So that's five seats.
That's five seats. And what is it, 51 now?
So it would be 56.
I mean... And then
44.
With what's going
on? What's going on now, the Republicans actually would have had a filibuster-proof potential 60 if they didn't blow these other things.
Exactly, because you look at what's happening in 2018. Everyone's focusing on the Senate from the Republican side because there is where you can pick up seats. You got Tester in Montana. You got Dakota with Heidi Heitkamp. You got Manchin in West Virginia. You have Donnelly in Indiana. You have Claire McCaskill in Missouri. That's five seats right there. Then you've got Rick Scott, who's a powerful governor down in Florida, who's running for Senate against Nelson.
He's going to beat him.
That's six seats. There's 57. That means you got three other places that you can look to try and pick up some upsets to get your 60-vote supermajority. And, you know, Hugin's doing a great job here in New Jersey, taking on Menendez. That could be a potential.
Wouldn't this be amazing if there was a wave election that goes against everything since World War II in the president's first term, midterm election? It would be absolutely incredible to keep the House, which I'm still worried about, because, look, they need 23 pickups in the House, and they're doing to about 49 other Republicans what they're doing to Seth right now.
Exactly.
That's the game,
and that's what they're focusing on. The Democrats are focusing on the House, Republicans are focusing on the Senate. And I think that things are different this time around because we've never seen a candidate, nominee, president like Donald Trump who might change the course of history. And I don't think this is necessarily a midterm election. You know, I think this is a re-election for the Trump agenda that is working. So people are going to come out because if he gets stopped, if the Democrats take control of the House, it stops everything. It stops the Make America Great agenda, and it stalls it.
All right, if the election were held tomorrow, well, let's say today, today's election day, general election day, 2018, early in the morning poll, who would win the Senate, and who would have the majority in the Senate, who would have the majority in the House? Linda, go first.
Don't know.
All right, well, I do know that Republicans are going to keep the Senate because the Democrats are defending so many seats. It's almost the flip of the House, where Republicans have a lot of problems right now because they had a record number of people like Lobiondo step down.
45 people retired.
It's really, really tough. So I can almost promise everyone Republicans will keep the Senate. I don't know that we're going to win every one that Brian said, but if there were five that you said we would pick up, I think we pick up at least three of them.
Mm-hmm.
So the margin's going to improve.
Yeah.
And ultimately, we'll get back the Alabama seat next year.
In 2020.
So some things will be okay in that regard. The House, very much in jeopardy.
Well,
right
the,
now.
The House is dangerous because, as you mentioned, it's 23 seats, right? So what happens? You've got all these Democrats.
All they have to do is destroy 23 Republican
23
candidates.
23 Republican candidates.
And they're working on Seth right now, and they're doing the same thing all over the country.
And I would also bring attention to the fact there's supposedly a number of Democrats that are pledging that they're not going to vote for Nancy Pelosi as Speaker of the House. Well, guess
21.
What? Guess what? If there's enough of them that let's say that the Democrats are successful and they take control of the House and they only have a margin of maybe three or five.
That
right?
is what it will be.
So then
under 10.
Under 10. So what happens to all these Democrats that have pledged, that have run on not voting for Nancy Pelosi? You think they're not going to vote for her? Because
well, then they've just sealed their fate that they'll be running in a year and they'll be defeated. So if they do, if they're weak and they screw their constituents, because if the constituents say, look, I'm taking you at your word, but if you go right in there and you go do that, you're done.
Mm-hmm.
That's how that will be perceived, and they will be finished.
Yeah.
All of them will be one-termers.
And that's the point.
So I say they won't support her. They'll have to support another Democrat.
Well, remember, it's whoever has the most votes.
You still have to get, it's not a plurality.
Yeah, this is
you
true.
You have to get the number
you have to get the
to
number
get.
For that person. Yeah.
Linda, closing comment.
I think Obama told us exactly who and what the Democratic Party are, and the fact that maybe unintentionally, what a bluffer he is and was for 8 years. He told when he was stumping for Hillary and he went about and he's talking about Trump, he says, Trump's going to bring back all these jobs. How's he going to do it? What magic wand is he going to wave? And I walked up into the kitchen. And I said to my husband, it was like an epiphany. It hit me. I said, John, he doesn't know. He doesn't know about an economy.
Well, of course he doesn't, because he never had a job. I, how many times have I said to everyone, literally, other than community agitator, this guy never worked the 4 to 12 shift at McDonald's. He never had a job. How can anybody expect him to understand the most complicated, complex economy on the planet? And everything he knew came from socialists that he was exposed to. So there was no way. Obamanomics is oxymoronic. There was no economics. It was a joke. It was, you know what it was? It was quantitative easing. It was, oh my gosh, what hole were we in? Print the money. QE1, QE2, QE3. And we were getting what? 0.0 to 0.8 type of GDP growth. Now look, free market capitalism booming, and we're going over 3%. It's already happened. We just haven't gotten the report yet. The second quarter is over. They know. They know what this number is. Linda, I got to get Brian on the record about this race in District 2. So we got to go. Have a great day. If you want to check back in with Gary in the 9 o'clock hour, I think it's going to be epic because I can't imagine a 26-plus year senior FBI agent watching this guy become sort of the face of his former job. It must be absolutely maddening to watch it. All right, let's come back home to the position that you wanted to get, and that was to be the Republican nominee in District 2. What do you think about what's happening so far?
So I think you're witnessing the standard operating procedures of the Democrats, where they try to use and label you every name in the book instead of focusing on the issues. And unfortunately, Seth is being attacked on all sides. He's being attacked by Media Matters. He's being abandoned by the NRCC and Chairman Stivers, unfortunately. And he needs to get around that. He needs to go directly to the voters and do what he's done for four decades. Get the word out and clarify. Don't stay on defense. Talk about the issues that matter to the second district, because if you don't talk about about the issues and you're constantly defending yourself, you're in a situation that it's a very, very uphill battle, even more so than it already was, because this was a target seat.
Look, and it's not just us. Within minutes of them finding out, the NRCC dropped their endorsement. I mean, they should have waited. They should have assessed. They should have gave Seth a chance to save himself by dumping him the way they did. I thought that was terrible.
It is. And, you know, that not even having that communication with Seth, from what I understand, they've had minimal conversations, if any at all. And to not
He did get a book about making his bed, and he did get the battery engraved by McCarthy. So they were helpful.
So that was helpful.
Yeah.
So, you know, Seth is going to do...
Seth has tight quarters, or corners, rather, on the sheet every day, and you can flip a quarter right on it. It's like a trampoline. It's that tight.
Well, you know, it's a good way to start your day, right?
Yes. So, officer and gentleman, he would pass Lou Gossett Jr.'s test.
Yeah, so, you know, you've got a situation where Van Drew is completely silent and all these lefty and Democrat flunkies are doing all this work by attacking Seth. And, you know, it's on CNN. They keep playing the clip from the debate slash candidate forum that where they take his comments out of context. They don't see the entire segment. You know, Seth's going to do what he needs to do. He's going to talk to the voters. He's going to knock on doors. He's going to go to churches, too. And he needs to keep pushing. He needs to keep getting the message out. We know who Seth is. We know he's not these names. And that's what they want him to do. They want him to say he's not a racist. They want him to say he's not a xenophobe, because that's the way that they believe that they're winning. And what he needs to do is push through his policies and what he's going to do, what he's going to vote on, and focus on the issues and get to the point where, okay, come November, you're going to vote for either Seth Grossman or Jeff Van Drew. Who do you think is going to better represent you in Congress here in South Jersey, not across the country where all these agitators apparently are coming from in cyberspace? Focus on the issues that are here in South Jersey, and that's what's going to get him to win. So again, the Atlanta County Young Republicans organization is meeting July 26th over at McCullough's and EHT at 5:30. We're targeting ages 14 to 40. Come on out. We can meet some more people. And as we continue to build this group, we're going to have guest speakers. We're going to talk about issues, national, local, everything under the sun, and just have a good time and hang out with like-minded Republicans.
Brian Fitzherbert, always nice to visit with you, my friend.